All right, all you movie junkies, it is time for the SLS Cast with your hosts, Matt and Tim.
And welcome to the semi-final episode of the year, kind of, sort of the SLS Cast.
Mayan apocalypse permitting.
Yes, you know, that's kind of how it's going to flow. But through the wonders of technology, no one who listens to the show, all 12 of you, will miss a beat because we are prepared. We are ready to rock. We have our Christmas episode that we're going to be talking about this year, or this time. And then we're going to be talking about for our New Year's episode, you know, just to set it all up again, because we didn't already do this at the end of the last episode. You know, we'll have the stuff we're looking forward to in 2013. And as an added bonus, the first week of 2013, we're going to resurrect the long-lost episode of episode 14, which we never actually got to air originally. So, you're going to get to see what our last collaborative effort was before we came back for our reboot. That's going to be all thanks to Michael, who did a bitchin' job of the editing, and has also graced us with his presence again. Yay!
I'm back. I did it. I made it this time.
Woo! All right. So, now that you guys know what the schedule's going to be, and now that we know what the schedule's going to be, I guess we're going to jump right on in. Mr. Tim, sir, how are you?
Doing well. I must add that hasn't the weather in Houston been nice the past couple weeks?
Oh, fuck, this is where I'm told. God damn, I hate this fucking weather. I'm still a little bit stuffed up. It's almost all completely gone. I'm sure you can probably hear just a little.
But it's dry there, right?
The last couple of days, yeah. The previous couple of days before that, it was fucking monsoon all over the damn place. And then the previous 3 days before that, it was 25 degrees.
Yeah, it's rainy as hell here in sunny California.
Not today. Today it's wind apocalypse, I'm going to call it, because it's pretty windy outside.
Oh, I mean, this weather is just kicking my ass because you can't get used to it. And then, you know, and so you think you're getting over a cold, and then it comes back and beats you in the head. And then, you know, it's like, hey, well, now that it's nice and sunny outside, you can be sick. Congratulations. And yeah, so on the flip side, though, I did find out that I got all my grades in from last semester and or this most recent semester, and I have maintained my 4.0. So,
oh, very nice.
I'm a nerd.
Congratulations.
What's up? Thank you. And, you know, looking forward to checking out of town here in a couple of days and spending Christmas doing a little bit of a Christmas invasion tour with the fam. And that'll be fun. And then coming back from that and enjoying life and celebrating the new year.
Cool. Yeah, I'll be in Sacramento for Christmas.
Ooh, heading up to the northern side of the state, huh?
Exactly. The City of Trees, they call it.
Go see the pretend mountains.
There's real mountains.
No, you have the beginnings of the actual mountains. You're at the, you know, very base end of the Cascades when you hit Sacramento. You're at the foothills.
Yeah, but then go a little also, I mean, like the Redwoods aren't, you know, too incredibly far away also.
Yes, but Redwoods, while amazingly awesome badass trees, do not mountains make.
Don't call the redwoods redwood trees.
Never having personally seen, and I've lived in California, never having personally seen a mountain of redwoods.
You lived in California?
Yes.
Where the hell did you live?
I lived in the wonderful first officially bankrupt city of Vallejo.
Ooh, oh, really? Where the Zodiac Killer had, you know, killed some people.
Yeah, I did. Oh, I lived out there when I was a little bitty kid.
Isn't that where Taco Bell got its start in Vallejo?
I have no idea. All I know, it was nice, you know, being right across the bay from San Francisco and stuff. Yeah, you know, you never knew what was going to happen. You might run into Michael Douglas and Carl Malden. I thought that was a pretty cool way to live life.
Oh, so you actually ran into Michael Douglas?
Well, you know, that's because I'm way fucking old, and that was just a reference to the streets of San Francisco, which is a bitchin' cop procedural that took place there that starred Michael Douglas and Carl Malden. Apparently I'm too old for you guys. Gonna go collect some Social Security now.
We just watched Desperate Housewives and Real Housewives of Orange County.
I guess so. So I'm gonna shut up now. You guys talk about whatever it is you want to talk about.
So how about them Russians at Trader Joe's, Michael? Do you ever, like, have to fight them off? I think this wind, personally, is taking care of them so I can go get my butter and my milk without having to get bitched at.
Russians?
Yes, I live in the Russian part of Hollywood. I live in Russia Central.
Oh, I do not have that issue.
Really? Okay, well, it's Russianville over here. Like, there's like a Russian park that Chelsea and I...
I was going to say, maybe he's dealing with Russian people because he's also dealing with Santa on a personal basis, as we just found out.
There you go.
Shortly before we started recording.
Yeah. So. Well, especially in Santa's red, it kind of brings some
He does give toys to everybody. It's very equal opportunity.
That is true.
I'm going to have to go to West Hollywood at some point. This sounds
a
little too intriguing.
I know. You get Russians, and you'll find a Yule log in every corner. It's great.
It's a Russian Yule log filled with milk and butter.
And vodka.
From Trader Joe's. All right. So, Mike, what about you, sir? We know that you had some schedule crap going down last week, so you couldn't join us. So how have you been?
I'm okay. We had visitors. My girlfriend's friends and like some internet people came and stayed at our apartment. And
ooh, internet people. Was it like a Reddit party or something?
Oh, no. It's just like Tumblr friends.
So it was a Tumblr party?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I haven't done much else. My girlfriend's currently gone right now. She's up in San Francisco for work. So I'm here by myself, which is awesome. I'm just in my underwear and an undershirt drinking beer and just not caring about anything.
Maybe I'm glad my car didn't work.
Oh, no. I would have gotten dressed for you.
Would you have dressed up like Santa? I don't think I can let this go, Tim. No. I'm sorry.
So Mike, I've whenever you have a Tumblr get-together, like whenever you're talking to somebody that has no idea what Tumblr is,
yeah,
like, oh, my Tumblr friends are over. Do they think like you're in tumbling and like you have a group of Tumblrs that get together and practice like tumbling and whatnot?
Me and the Russian gymnast do tumbling parties.
That's where they go. I need to find out when your meetings are so I can go to the store.
So it sounds like everybody's doing all right then. So these episodes might be a little bit shorter, but hey, what the hell? It's the holidays. Go spend time with your family and stop hiding from them and listening to our show. Now, after the holidays, get back and listen to our show and don't do anything else. So, news. Mike, you're up.
Oh, wait, I don't have any news.
My news was the update on the Russian culture in West Hollywood.
Outstanding. Wow, you mean I'm the only one with news? That is ridiculous. Okay, well, you kind of covered news primarily the last couple of episodes anyway, so I guess it's only fair it's my turn. All right, so I've got four really easy things. Two of them are actually from Mr. Dan Lin. But first, we have the fact that James Franco apparently will not be returning for Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. As we all know, he was in Rise of the Planet of the Apes with Andy Serkis, who did a phenomenal job. And they were gonna, and even though apparently the way that they have this sequel skewed is that it's supposed to take place significantly into the future. How many years is up for grabs apparently at this point, but it is definitely in such a time frame that the majority of the people who were in the first movie would be dead now. And so, as Franco was explaining it, they were going to have kind of like a flashback scene or perhaps something that was viewed on a monitor or something like that, you know, between like Caesar looking back at a video monitor or something like that. And that was going to be kind of like the cameo that James Franco was going to have just to kind of, you know, keep things tied up in a nice little bow. But unfortunately, they have changed directors and we now, instead of having Rupert Wyatt, there is Matt Reeves of Let Me In fame, which is a fantastic movie. And so, since he's doing that now and Rupert Wyatt isn't, it looks like Franco's not going to be coming back. To sum up a quote that Franco gave while speaking to MTV, essentially it kind of rolls up to, but there was one scene, unquote, but there was one scene between Caesar and my character, maybe even just like on a video that was left behind. But then a lot of things happened, like Tom Rothman, who was a big part of the first movie, left. Now, Rupert's not a part of it, so I don't know. My guess is I won't be in it. Nobody's talked to me since Rupert left. So, kind of a bummer, because even though Franco wasn't the heart and soul of Rise of the Planet of the Apes, it was kind of cool to see that dynamic, and even at the end of the movie, especially, to, you know, to watch the power that they still had over each other at the end really still be firm. It would have been nice to at least kind of have that referenced.
My only question is, I know there were scenes in the first movie where he like recorded, like it was like not test video, but scientific research video of him like training Caesar. Can't they still use that video as like that's what he's looking at?
They could, yes. I mean, they could definitely use, you know, recycled material. Yeah. But I think the idea here was that even in terms of a cameo appearance, they were going to have something that would be new footage. And I think that that would have, it could have helped add to the new movie in a way that just referencing found material can't.
Mm.
Kind of like in Rocky V, when he is remembering his time with his original trainer, played by Burgess Meredith, and they actually have a flashback, but it was a new scene, even though Burgess Meredith's character had already died two movies previously. And so, and it was really just an amazing scene, aside from the fact that you're looking at Burgess Meredith going, oh my god, he got old. It was just a really cool scene. It's one of actually the better scenes in the movie, because there's really only like three good scenes in that movie. And it was really cool. And if they had just tried to use something where they recycled it from one of the older movies, it really would have taken you out of the moment that Rocky V was trying to create. And I think that would have been cool to do here for Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. Next, we have Dan Lin. Basically, he is got two things going on kind of like in a row. He is basically talking about two different movies. There, one is what I think is part of a really kick-ass idea, and they're actually going to make a Lego movie. And the Lego movie at this point is entitled Lego Piece of Resistance. I'm sorry, I think that's just amazing.
If it can be as funny as the Lego video games are,
exactly,
then I'm happy.
I wonder what the title is in French. Like, would it
and
be
that's
like,
the other thing
Les Resistance de Lego. Well,
but that's the beauty of it, is because, you know, it's also a play on Pièce de Resistance. So,
exactly.
You know, I really think that's amazing. So they've got, you know, they've got already characters being voiced and stuff like that. Apparently, they have a gentleman named President Business, who's going to be voiced by Will Ferrell. They also have Bad Cop, who's going to be voiced by Liam Neeson.
Oh, yes.
Okay. And so, basically, Piece of Resistance is made in such a way that the fans of Lego were thought about throughout everything. Okay. Essentially, Lin is quoted as saying, "The vision that Lord and Miller had for the movie was that anything you see in the movie can be actually built out of Lego bricks. And with Lego, they know their core audience so well that they're really helping to educate us about their core audience and what they like and what they may have issues with." So, you know, they've already putting the spirit of Lego behind this movie, and I really hope that, you know, with someone like Dan Lin, I don't think you're going to have too much to worry about in terms of production values and how it's going to turn out. The only thing that I was concerned with is that he's kind of, the way the production process is working out is that they're kind of, that's going to apparently create a perfect segue into the starting work on the 21 Jump Street sequel, and I don't know, maybe we could have a better movie than the 21 Jump Street sequel. I'm just saying.
I think we definitely can have a better movie than that.
So, let's have more Lego and less 21 Jump Street, I guess is the point of that. But
just go ahead and make Lego 1, 2, and 3 back-to-back.
Yeah,
48 frames, 3D, make it happen.
Yeah. I mean, and again, but again, Lorna Miller, even though they did do 21 Jump Street, they also did Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. So, while maybe not so much on the adult humor side, they've clearly done some good work on the family-friendly side. And I am perfectly backed and excited about the Lego movie. So, I guess, you know, you gotta take the good with the bad.
All I want to see in the Lego movie is a barefoot Lego character walking, and he steps on a one-by-one piece barefoot, and he just screams and falls over.
I'm sure they will probably do that, like, as an outtake of the credits. I can't see how they would not. Second to last for me is that, again, Dan Lin, who obviously is working, you know, on Lego and working on the 21 Jump Street thing, had this to say okay, about Sherlock Holmes 3. Okay, don't worry, people who are thinking what's happening with it. It's just that everybody in the freaking world is so busy right now that they haven't had time to get to it yet. However, it's on everybody's to-do list. It is on the plates to happen. And it turns out that they're just waiting for some movies to come out. Okay? So, the current status, according to Mr. Lin again, is that it's, for Sherlock Holmes 3, is that it's still in development. Drew Pearce is working on the script, and Downey, as you know, is still finishing Iron Man 3, so we're waiting for Downey to finish that movie and to get a script from Drew. Alright? The thing is, though, is that they are, again, because the way that they have incorporated the ideas from the books into these two movies has been so priceless that they want to keep that idea going forward. So they also said that it's a high priority for the studio and for all the filmmakers involved to make the right movie. We got a great response to the second movie, and frankly, the Moriarty character set such a high bar that we want to make sure we're telling the right story for the third movie. He also is not willing to go into details on who's coming back, given the way that Game of Shadows ended. And I'm not going to spoil that for anybody who hasn't seen it. Although, if you haven't seen it, go see it. Last but not least on the news front is a Funny or Die piece, so head to funnyordie.com or just Google, Bing, whatever the hell you like to use. Search for The Sad Off. S-A-D, second word, O-F-F. And it's between Samuel L. Jackson and Anne Hathaway. And basically it's a just a 4-minute piece where because they both have movies coming out on Christmas Day that are so serious in nature, even though we use the term serious loosely in the Tarantino sense, because while he does tackle serious issues, he does it with such a trademark style that more often than not end up laughing at it. I mean, come on. You laughed when the dude got shot in the face in the back of the car. You laughed when the dude got hit upside the head with the baseball bat, therefore crushing his skull. I'm pretty sure you're going to laugh when a slave driver gets killed. I'm just saying. Now, so there's still some kind of serious undertones there and sad things going on. And then, of course, you have Anne Hathaway with Les Miserables, who, you know, it's just a freaking sad story. And so they come up, and the idea behind this little skit is that they're basically just trying to tell you that they want to wish you a happy, safe holiday season, Merry Christmas, what have you. And, you know, but they understand that, you know, they need to do this because their movies are kind of sad, and Anne Hathaway provides an example where then Samuel Jackson counters with an example. And then she's like, no, yeah, but she has another example. And and then they literally turn it into who has the saddest part in their movies, respectively. And it's just absolutely hilarious. You end up laughing the whole time. I one minor little thing so that you will go watch this. It's a slave plantation gingerbread house. Just saying. I'm just saying. So worth watching. Check it out. Funny or Die. Slave gummy bears. Awesome. Okay. That's all the movie news that I have. And apparently that makes it all the movie news that we have. Moving along to 3 Squared, our 3 Squared for this week. And by the way, folks, we will not have a 3 Squared for next week because, you know, what the hell kind of movies do you have about New Year's? Anyway, aside from Sleepless in Seattle and New Year's Eve and whatever else. Yeah, so there's no 3 Squared for next week or the week after. We'll just pick up with whatever when we come back live again. So have fun with that. 3 Squared for this week, though, was your 3 favorite holiday movies. And it turns out that one movie made all 3 lists, so I dropped it from mine so I could put another one in there. And Tim, go.
All right, yeah. Okay, so I'm going to start with my least favorite and work my way up. My number 3 is Jim Henson's The Muppet Christmas Carol from 1992, directed by Brian Henson. All I gotta say is you can't beat the performances in this movie. I mean, not only just from the Muppets, but I think Michael Caine, next to George C. Scott, plays the best Ebenezer Scrooge in any Christmas Carol movie adaptation. Also, it's Statler and Waldorf are Jacob and Robert Marley, and just whenever they come up with, you know, the chains and they sing that song, you know, Marley, Marley, woo, it's just hysterical. But yeah, again, Michael Caine, Ebenezer Scrooge, great performance and good stuff. Also, as a side note, this is the first Muppet film in which the story revolves solely around characters played by human beings, specifically Ebenezer Scrooge.
Also the first movie to be made after Jim Henson died.
This is true. Yeah, and Brian Henson took over as Kermit the Frog. My second movie is White Christmas, 1954, directed by Michael Curtiz. It had Bing Crosby and Danny Kaye, Vera Ellen, and Rosemary Clooney filmed in Technicolor.
I thought it was VistaVision.
VistaVision. Well, that too. But, I mean, that's different. That's the formatting, VistaVision.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That was that special style of film they were using.
Yeah, because VistaVision is, I think, double the size of it. It's like, you know, yeah,
like
35
millimeters,
millimeter, like 65 millimeter. Yeah, but White Christmas was actually intended to be a Bing Crosby and Fred Astaire movie to reunite them, doing because I guess they were doing like a multiple movies of like Irving Berlin showcase musicals. And so this is supposed to be the third. And also, they both had were in Holiday Inn, which also had the song White Christmas.
That's where it actually originated from.
Right, and this was 12 years earlier. And it actually won Holiday Inn the Academy Award before even the movie White Christmas was actually thought of and came about. However, Astaire declined to take the project after reading the script, and, you know, I guess he just wasn't getting enough money to, you know, to be in such a fluffy type musical. So he wanted to be released from his contract from Paramount. And then Bing Crosby also left shortly after. And then after his son and wife died, he took some time off and he realized, you know what, I think I'm going to do this show. So he comes back and then Danny Kaye comes back in, or comes in, period. And therefore, you know, White Christmas is what it is today. And again, it was the first movie to be released in VistaVision, which is a widescreen style of film, which was developed by Paramount Studios. And it was basically twice the size of the VistaVision film. It was twice the size of a standard 35mm projected film. So it's just kind of a bit of cool little history there. And then my number one, that this is the one that the three of us picked that was on our list. So I guess it goes to show that it's the best Christmas film made, I guess, is 1989 National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation with Chevy Chase, Beverly D'Angelo, Juliette Lewis, Johnny Galecki, Doris Roberts, Randy Quaid, Mae Questuhl, and I think the one guy who definitely steals the movie is William Hickey, which you might remember him from Princess Bride when he was the Mowage guy, priest, pastor, dude. And also, it was written by John Hughes, and that's what really makes the movie the masterpiece, the Christmas holiday masterpiece that it is, because John Hughes was basically the movie guy, movie go-to writer of the 1980s. You know, Pretty in Pink, Breakfast Club, all those teen flicks. It's just funny, great quotes. I'm sure the three of us can sit back and just quote the movie, you know, for at least an hour or two.
If any of you are looking for any last-minute gift ideas for me,
I have one. I'd like Frank Shirley, my boss, right here tonight.
I want him brought from his happy holiday slumber over there on Melody Lane with all the other rich people, and I want him brought right here with a big ribbon on his head. And I want to look him straight in the eye, and I want to tell him what a cheap, lying, no-good, rotten, four-flushing, low-life, snake-licking, dirt-eating, inbred, overstuffed, ignorant, blood-sucking, dog-kissing, brainless, dickless, hopeless, heartless, fat-ass, bug-eyed, stiff-legged, spotty-lipped, worm-headed sack of monkey shit he is! Hallelujah! Holy shit! Where's the Tylenol?
It's great. And my last thing about Christmas Vacation is that I think even more so than Vacation, and I think it received, you know, more a critical acclaim, and it performed pretty well at the box office since it went against Back to the Future 2 the same weekend. So,
well, it's often cited as the best overall of the Vacation series, but also it's also the one that people like the most, as opposed to the original Vacation, because they were trying to look for an excuse to make of it another Vacation movie, but European Vacation didn't do as well as the original Vacation did, and so the Christmas thing kind of allowed Chase and Hughes to team up again.
Hey, Clark, your shitter was full. Okay, Mikkel, how about yours?
Okay, I also have vacation, so I'm not going to go over that again. I also have Elf, which is Will Ferrell.
That is an interesting choice, sir. I would like to know why that is on your list.
I didn't like it when I first saw it, and then I watched it again about in a non-holiday time. I watched it probably middle of the year or something, and I loved it the second time I watched it. And it's just something about it. It's just the comedy's really good in it. It's like a Will Ferrell movie, but it's not a Will Ferrell movie because it's not that way. And then it's who's the director?
Jon Favreau.
Yeah. So it's just like it's weird to see him now direct the movies that he directs. But this was like I think his first, not the first one he directed, but the first like major release he directed. And I don't know, Zooey Deschanel of course is in it, and it's just good. There's something about it that I just watch it, and it's one of those movies where if it's on, I'll sit down and watch it, and it'll be over and be like, oh, that's an hour and a half gone now. Okay, well, I enjoyed every minute of it. Like, there's no slow parts to it to me, like a lot of holiday movies have, where it's just like, oh, here comes a super sappy slow part. It's just, like, paced very well, and it's just a very good movie that is also holiday-themed.
Yeah, I'll say, I mean, for, like a kind of a fluff holiday movie that, you know, just doesn't kind of, like, you know, jack around and... You know, trying to be like overly dramatic and overly, you know, Christmassy and whatnot. I think I have to agree with him. It's actually not that not a bad movie to have on your holiday movie list.
Thank you.
I own it on DVD. I'm not trying to say it's a terrible movie. I just was surprised that it was a top three pick. That's all.
I don't like a lot of holiday movies. That's the other thing. So it's hard for me to. There's not a big list for me to choose from. It's not like I watch a lot of holiday movies and it's like, oh, this and this. There's not. Yeah. And so finally, my number one is Love Actually, because I can't tell you why I love that movie so much. I just, that movie is amazing.
I like Bill Nighy in that movie.
Yeah, and then Keira Knightley is really good in that movie, because she's very pretty. And then
then you should love Domino.
yes, I do love Domino. No, I don't love Domino, but it's okay. But then Andrew Lincoln... Which is weird because when Walking Dead started, I was like, that guy looks super familiar. And then I was like, oh, because he was way fatter in Love Actually.
And then you have Bilbo now dry humping.
Yes. Oh, God, that whole relationship in that movie is amazing.
Is it bad that my favorite segment or vignette out of the entire movie is the one with Alan Rickman? And it's, you know, the husband and wife are going through their crap marriage. And it turns out he's actually cheating on her with this other woman.
He's not acting. On
well,
her.
Not actually. Yeah, it's just like he. I mean, you just know he's like growing tired of her, growing. You know, they're growing apart, or he's growing apart, and then she has to spend the rest of her life like she can't leave him, just staying with him, and just accepting the fact that he's the kind of guy that he is. Just for some reason, that's my favorite part of the entire movie. Not that I would, you know, I condone it. It's just I thought it was well done.
It's a weird part to like, but I can understand it. Okay.
Yeah.
Or just when the guy finally comes to America and he goes to like that random country bar in Wisconsin and it's the three super hot girls and they just go right to bed with him.
Yeah, because that happens every time, you know, you go into Wisconsin.
Exactly.
They don't call it Spread Your Legs Wisconsin for nothing.
I like that. Was good. So those are my three.
Very cool. Well, I had two. I actually shared two. I since changed them. I had White Christmas and Christmas Vacation on there as well. So I dropped both of them so that I could come, so that we could have some, you know, slightly different perspectives. And so I'm going to go and do them basically in the order that they came out. Alright, this is the order in which they were released theatrically and not by my favorite or whatever. So, first up is going to be the 1947 issue of Miracle on 34th Street, which I think is another, it is a classic Christmas movie. It's, you know, one of the breakout roles for little Natalie Wood. Got Edmund Gwenn, the guy who played Santa. Kris Kringle in it. He actually won the Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor. And this film was also an amazing starring vehicle for Maureen O'Hara and John Payne. So this is also a movie that made nearly 5 times its budget back, which is saying a lot back then, considering it was a little over $600,000, made a little over $3 million in the box office in 1947. That's a lot of money. So, again, great movie, great cast. And as we all know, it's the story of a little girl who no-nonsense mother teaches her there's no such thing as Santa Claus. And what happens when Santa Claus actually comes into the picture. It's also really cool, I think, because it shows the inner workings of Macy's and the actual Thanksgiving Day parade and everything like that, which is really cool because you get to see the 1947 version. And then, you know, during the holiday season, most people actually get to see the, you know, whatever, 2012 version, 2013. That's what
they're for. And they're still the same floats, and they were in 1947.
Yeah. Well, it's really cool because they do make a point of bringing 2 or 3 of them that have been in the past. They always try to bring a couple of them back. And then, like, the actual Pilgrim Head people, they've been in them for, like, all 60, 70, 80 years or whatever that's been going on. So it is neat to see some of the stuff that you saw when you were a kid or some of the stuff that you've seen in movies in the past and stuff. So that's a really good one. So that one's on the list. Second up is Scrooged. This one was released in 1988, directed by Richard Donner, who did another fantastic Christmas movie called Lethal Weapon. And it's basically, as the title would imply, a modernized version of A Christmas Carol. And it stars Bill Murray, Karen Allen, Bobcat Goldthwait, John Forsythe, Carol Kane, Robert Mitchum. It's also got, what's his name? He had that ridiculous song.
Oh, I know you're talking, yeah.
It's David Johansen is his name, but he went under Buster Poindexter.
There you go.
Was, you know, which had the, well, I'm feeling hot, hot, hot song. So, yeah. great, just a great, great film. Wonderfully adapted to the then current time period of 1988. And honestly, at the end of the movie, when, you know, Scrooge comes out of, you know, Frank Cross in this particular movie, snaps to it and finally realizes it still gets me in the feels a little bit every time. Even after all these years, it is one of the few Christmas movies that I make it a point to watch every single year. And that's kind of what solidified it on this list. My final one is something that is exciting for me because we get to talk about it for next week's show as well. And that is Bad Santa, which is Billy Bob Thornton. Bernie Mac is in that as well. Tony Cox, right? Is that his dwarf? That's the dwarf?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so Tony Cox is in it as well, who's absolutely hilarious. And John Ritter, of course, I forgot. He's in that. He's absolutely hilarious. And basically, this is a movie about a dude who's named Willie T. Stokes. And it's just interesting because it is a comedy overall. And when I first saw this movie, I did not see it in the theater. I actually saw the DVD release, and they called it Batter Santa. So it was completely uncut with all the crap in it. This movie is really more or less, it's labeled as a comedy or a black comedy. But it's really a dramedy because Billy Bob Thornton does not have a good life. His character, Willie T. Stokes, does not have a good life. And you literally look at this man trying to figure out what the fuck he's got a reason to live for. And through the course of this movie, despite how despicable he is, and despite how awesome hearing "fuck me Santa, fuck me Santa, fuck me Santa" is over and over again, you actually see a form of redemption in this character. And it's just a fantastic movie. Really great, really funny. Billy Bob Thornton plays a guy named Willie T. Stokes who combines with his friend Marcus to be a Santa, a department store Santa. Only what they do is they are very clever in how they act as Santa, even though he's a terrible Santa. So that they can case the entire department store and rob it blind on Christmas Eve. and so they're able to crack safes, and I mean, it's a really sophisticated operation that they have going on. And so this particular, the movie takes place in a particular, it's either New Mexico or Phoenix, I can't remember. And it's the story of their, I guess, last job together. I think they've agreed to work together one more time or whatever. I'm not, you know, I don't want to give away too much of it. And then basically the misadventures that happen and then how it all turns out. And I'm sorry, but this movie is funny. It is just absolutely funny. It's very sick. It's very twisted and very, 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 very funny. And that's it.
All right. I have never seen Bad Santa, and I want to watch it. And I also feel that if I watch Scrooged again, I'll probably appreciate it a lot more now, because the last time I watched it, I was probably 15. So.
Yeah, give me Scrooge over Bad Santa. Give me a lot of things over Bad Santa. All the reasons why I think you like it, Matt. I think that's why I don't like it, to be honest.
Why? Because it's.
I think
people are doing redemptive things eventually are bad.
Well, no. I just think, like, I mean, it's what I'm gonna probably mention during like 21 Jump Street. Which, okay, well, I think I'll say this, is that I really don't want to say anything about Bad Santa, because I didn't see it until much later on after it came out. So I've kind of already been tainted by some of the other crap that kind of came out, you know, after it. Because I'll say one thing about Bad Santa, and a couple other movies that came out around that same year, is that that was kind of like a type of movie that a lot of people weren't used to seeing, like that humor and whatnot. And so, like, there were a lot of movies that came out afterwards that kind of took that route with humor and, like, being, like, overly vulgar just to be funny and just, like, you know, a whole lot of them at once. And I think I just kind of got sick and tired of seeing it by the time I actually watched Bad Santa. So, yay.
All right, then.
Yeah.
Fuck it. Let's move on. Let's start talking about some goddamn movies.
Oh, well, first, there's really only one movie we need to, we must speak of, Hobbit.
But Hope. We'll mention it throughout the, whenever you start talking about the favorite movies and stuff.
Well, we all sure. Saw it. I did say we were going to talk about that specifically.
Yeah. So, I want to talk about it.
So let's talk about Hobbit. Let's get it out of the way. So this way we can just go through our list of movies. And then we can be done.
Talk. All right.
okay, I'll start.
Go ahead.
I saw it last night at 10 p.m. and I saw it in the 48 frames in 3D, and I kept my glasses because I don't want to keep 3D green, because the glasses are green themselves. So, really liked the movie in general. Like, overall, I enjoyed it. I liked the backstory they did at the beginning, and I liked the add-ins they did that I don't think they were actually in the book. I have to go reread The Hobbit now that I think about it. But the whole Radagast part and a lot of other stuff they added was really good.
They didn't add it per se. What happened was there was, an appendix, if you will, a concordance,
mm-hmm.
That Tolkien wrote for The Hobbit.
Okay.
And that had a lot of the backstory in it and provided a lot of additional dialogue for certain characters who are like, wait a minute, why is this guy talking? Because he never talks in the book.
I know they didn't make it up, because that's just not how Tolkien and they don't do it. But I knew it came from somewhere, but I just don't remember if it was in the actual.
So you're not going to find it in the book. There was a separate, like, concordance, if you will, that was almost a whole other book on its own that was just kind of filler material and stuff, and additional stuff that Tolkien had expanded the universe about. And that's how they filled the backstory in. I just didn't want you to be disappointed read the book and were like, it's still not there.
I knew it would be somewhere. I just said I would have to find the right book. So I like where the movie ended. It was a good end spot. I like the way it ended. It was awesome. So yeah, overall, as the movie itself, the content, very good. My only issue with the way it was presented, the 3D looked great because it was shot in 3D. All the CGI looked amazing, as it should. The 48 frames didn't bother me in, like, I got seasick or whatever, like everyone else got, like, motion sickness or whatever. But all the action scenes with the CG and the 48 frames, they all looked like a video game to me. They all looked like quick time events in a video game that would happen, that you would have to, like, hit the right trigger in order to make sure that something actually happened, and then the movie proceeded, kind of thing. The dialogue scenes and all the quiet moments looked beautiful in the 48 frames and in the 3D. The minute the action started, it just looked very video gamey.
Yeah, well, I saw the movie as well in 48 frames per second. And for people that don't know, regular movies, or the normal movies, I guess, are 24 frames per second. That's the industry, movie industry standard. So the whole thing with 48 frames per second is that whenever you watch it in 3D, usually if you watch it in regular 24 frames per second, there's kind of like a visual lag in a way. So it hurts somebody's eyes, like mine, it kind of screws up my eyes. But watching it in 48 frames per second, everything's kind of smoother and crisper, and it's basically you're watching a movie through a window, pretty much. And I will agree. I mean, it's beautiful. Like, establishing shots are great. It took a lot. I don't know about you, Michael, but man, I had to adjust for the first maybe 10-15 minutes because I wasn't sure what to expect with the look of it.
Yeah.
However, with the a lot of people were saying that the contrast with live action and animation, especially with 48 frames per second, I think that's going to have to be something that a lot of us might have to kind of get used to in a way, because as of now, especially with using non-CG backdrops and kind of like how he's been using New Zealand as a backdrop, it's kind of difficult to have CGI, like a lot of CGI going on in a realistic setting, unless that realistic setting is a false setting.
Yeah.
And like something else a lot of people were saying, that it just looked weird. The entire movie looked weird in 48 frames per second. And what I got from it is that if you watch like a travel channel thing, like on Discovery Channel or National Geographic in HD, and you just see like this, again, a window picturesque look that you're actually right there like in a helicopter watching all this stuff, it just has that HD look to it. And a lot of people think that it just looks weird because it looks real.
And it's, well, you know, it's not just the HD thing that gives it that. It's a lot of the newer TVs, they do 120 hertz as opposed to 60 hertz.
Right.
And that's what gives it that super real look.
Yeah, the really crisp, yeah,
there's no motion
glossy
blur.
Type look. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I guess that's another way of explaining, I guess, 48 frames per second, is that depending on what kind of scene it is, if it's like a bright, you know, on the rolling hills of New Zealand or, you know, Middle Earth, you know, it has like kind of like a glossy look to it. And my God, man, mixed with that 3D, it was quite, you know, it was a gorgeous movie to sit and watch for 2 hours and 45 minutes.
Yeah.
So it was well worth the price of admission, I think.
Is it my turn?
Yeah.
All right. So I saw it at midnight when it came out last Thursday, and I saw it in IMAX and 3D, and I did some research on it because apparently IMAX is rather schizophrenic. It hears voices, literally, because sometimes they film it in 24, and sometimes they film it in 30, and sometimes they film it in 48, and sometimes they film it at 72 frames per second. So I never could find out, because I was an idiot, and the night that I got there I forgot to ask them which way it got filmed. So I don't know, but I did see it in IMAX in 3D, for whatever it's worth. When I went in, I also got a complimentary 4-pack of promotional movie posters.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and they're actually really good, like frameable, like framing quality. With one's got Bilbo on it, one's got Gandalf on it, one's got not Thorin, but Theor. His grandson, or what? The actual dwarf who's taking everybody on. What's his name?
It's Thorin. Thorin Oakenshield.
No, Thorin's the granddad. I thought it was.
That's Thrain.
Yeah, Thrain.
Yeah, Thrain's the granddad. Yeah.
Oh, I've got it backwards. Okay. So, all right. So for some reason, I thought it was Thrain and not Thorin. At any rate, so yeah, so Thorin, and then I can't remember the last one. And not only are they really badass posters, but they all say 12/01/2012.
Oh, that's cool.
So, yeah, complimentary. They were just, I was like, what is this? They're like, oh, no, you get it for being here in IMAX. I was like, well, shit, yeah. So, I made the mistake of trying to interject this into my normal life, and I should not have, because it literally did detract from my movie-going experience. I had, like I had been saying, I was still getting over being sick, still had a sinus infection. I had gone out and I had just come from a concert, from a local band concert, because of Cries of Solace and stuff, supporting them. And the night before, I had also been out at another local band thing, and I had been up since 7 a.m. that day.
Oh.
And so, yeah, there's just a lot you know, going on. So I still made it there. I was feeling pretty good after, you know, some imbibing and libations. And I got there, and it was all good. So we sit down, and there was the Tom Cruise movie came out. You know, so I watched that, and I'm like, okay, well, whatever. It looks kind of weird, but sure, it's got Morgan Freeman in it. It might be worth watching. And then there was another preview, which, Jack the Giant Slayer, which actually looked interesting. So I was surprised. Hansel and Gretel was another one, looked surprisingly interesting. It was also the second time that I had seen that preview. And then they finally got to the Star Trek Into Darkness thing that was just for IMAX, and boy did they let you know, because like, here comes your IMAX special preview. So and it was in 3D as well. So let me say this about Star Trek Into Darkness, okay? I'm watching that trailer, I forgot I was there for The Hobbit, and I'm not joking. I literally forgot that I was there for The Hobbit, and the trailer ends, and I was like, sick, whoa! I mean, it sucked me in that quick. I got such a nerd hard on for this, dude. My E-peen is all over the place right now. I mean, I cannot wait for Star Trek to come out.
It was just the first 9 minutes, right?
Yes, it's actually really good. Only the first. It's the first 6.5 minutes, actually, because then they go back and the last minute and a half, 2 minutes or whatever is just the actual trailer for the movie.
Oh, okay.
So they lead you all the way up to this little, to the edge of this little cliff of the scene, and you're like, oh, because then they just stop it and show that. And I was like, oh my god! It literally, I could not believe I forgot I was there for The Hobbit. So, guys, I'm telling you, oh, it's good. It's good. And in 3D, it was good. And in IMAX, it was good. I was so impressed. So, moving into The Hobbit. The last 35 to 40 minutes of that movie, it was hard. Guys, it was hard. It was good, don't get me wrong. The Hobbit is awesome. I love the cinematography. I really enjoyed watching Bilbo become an actual character, not just a reference point for the franchise, but to actually watch him when Gandalf takes over, like when he takes over the house at the very beginning of the movie, you know? And, you know, what mark on my... There's no mark on my... No, Bilbo, I put the mark there. It's like, what? And then he just kind of like rolls over and lets it happen, you know? you really get to see him become a person, but you also see just how devious he is throughout the movie as well. So I loved watching Bilbo come to life. He was really my favorite character of the whole movie. However, it being so long and it being after 3 o'clock in the morning, and I'm like, I'm really getting tired. The last 35 to 40 minutes, I found myself shifting in my seat, leaning forward, and, you know, trying not to bother the people around me or whatever, and to get through it, because I was, you know, getting there. But in terms of the technology in the 3D, I was impressed. I felt it was immersive. And I think that the problem with the 3D, regardless of whether or not you see it in 24 frames per second or 48 frames per second, especially when you start seeing it in IMAX and stuff, is that your body creates a condition. It's a physiological thing. Your body creates, your body has kind of like, think of it like a built-in gyroscope, all right? So that when you're running or when you're walking, the world doesn't move, okay? It stays in the same perspective all the time. But think about cops. Think about any kind of documentary, right? And when someone has got the camera and they pan it real quick and they start chasing somebody down the street, it starts to hurt your eyes after, you know, a few seconds and starts irritating you because it's bouncing all over the place and shaking you all up. That's because you don't have that little internal gyroscope thing because it's mechanical instead of physiological. And I think when you get into those intense battle scenes, like when they're escaping from the goblin stronghold, it would be a chief example of that. There's the cutaways where they're going from the top, and you know, and everything, and then they get jumped back into the action, and then they shoot it from below, and then they're swinging around and everything. You get to see all the badass stuff Gandalf's doing, Thorin's and all that. Everybody's pulling off and everything, and you're able to experience all that, but it's jostling you around, and that I think is what gets it start. It's what starts getting people kind of like, you know, you have to get used to it, or you know, you feel like you're it takes you out of that immersion, because again, the movie being shot in 3D does that. So at any rate, so again, I think that is what really affects the 3D, especially like at the you know, when they're getting into the climax of the movie, you know, make sure, you know, spoilers obviously, people. When they're getting to the climax of the movie where Bilbo eventually saves Thorin and everything, they, you know, it, again, it's all that bouncing around, all that, you know, and you kind of feel like you're in it, but again, it kind of pulls you out of that immersion that the 3D provides for you, and that kind of took it out of me. The only other thing that I would say about the movie in and of itself is that I'm kind of curious, even with the additional material that they're able to, that the additional source material that Jackson's able to use, it seemed like to me they got 40%+ through the book.
I will
where
I
they
will
left
agree with
off
you
at the movie. Yeah. So I'm kind of curious as to how he said that he found enough material to make a third movie.
I'm thinking that the middle one is, that's the Desolation of Smaug, it's called, or something like that, right?
Yeah, it's.
I mean, it basically means that the second movie is going to be all of Mirkwood, and then they get to the mountain and they have to kill Smaug. Spoiler alert, I guess, if you haven't don't know anything.
In case you don't know anything about this book that's been out since like 1937.
And that just means that the third movie is just the giant battle that is the battle of four or five armies. I forget, and then it's going to five armies. So the battle of five armies, and then it's going to be. It's going to be like Return of the King, where the very end is like six endings, and they just wrap up everybody's story, so that's where all that additional material
is. They're bridging the gap between The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings, so it's one cohesive thing. Yeah.
So like the very end of the movie, it'll be like the beginning of this one, where they had Elijah Wood back as Frodo, and so, okay, I can see it. I mean, I can just see that battle scene's probably going to be very long and very epic.
Well, because like what the thing with Jackson with the additional material is that when Tolkien went to go after he wrote Lord of the Rings, his plan was to go back and rewrite The Hobbit and make it in more to a larger book with more material.
He kind of did. He did do on repressings of it. He added more stuff.
Right, but yeah, like he has like journals and a lot of journals that he has, and I guess his great-granddaughter or the estate or whoever let Jackson, Peter Jackson, and I guess the other writer, Fran, I forget her name.
Oh, but it's Philippa Boyens and Fran Walsh?
Yeah, Fran Walsh, there you go. Yeah, so they let them look at it, and so they took that, and that, you know, that's what they're developing, you know, kind of adding into the story and whatnot with, I guess, additional characters and figure out, you know, more background to Gandalf, maybe.
Watching it last night, and since I've read all of Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit and some of the Silmarillion and stuff like that, I kind of put myself, when they're all talking about all the different wizards, like they're talking about Radagast and they're talking about the Necromancer and all this other side stuff, and there's all like the stuff that's not in the core book, that's not necessarily even necessary for the story of the movie itself, but ties into all the other movies and stuff like that. I sit there and I try to put my place of a person who isn't me and hasn't read all the books and is just kind of going to see it because it's a big holiday movie. And they must be sitting there being like, the fuck is all this wizard ass shit? And there's a bunny rabbit pulling a guy. Like, what the hell? It seems like it's... Lord of the Rings seemed a little bit more accessible as far as like the normal movie going audience, other than the length. And this one seems like it's very much... Like The Hobbit itself, it's very...
More like fantasy?
Or it's super fantasy.
Yeah.
Right, but I will say that I do like the fact that that I kind of like the switch where Martin Freeman's kind of the main guy, and Benedict Cumberbatch is kind of you know, lower on the totem pole, so to speak. Yeah, so, because most people don't realize he's the necromancer, so.
Oh, that's right, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Nice.
So, that's, yeah, so I was, like, really excited about that, so I was like, yeah, what's up? And I do also like how they were able to incorporate Kate Blanchett, Christopher Lee, Hugo Weaving.
Yeah.
You know, and let them have that big scene back and everything. Especially considering, you know, Christopher Lee is freaking 90 years old. So I was glad they were able to throw him back in one more time. Because it's...
They let him sit down, at least.
Yeah. And it's interesting to see him in a different light. You know, everybody's used to him being Sauron. You know, everybody's used to, you know, the fighting that all went on and everything. And to actually see him in kind of a different perspective, I thought was really kind of cool. And again, anything that can showcase Christopher Lee, because, you know, he's definitely old school. And, you know, that's always badass to bring the old school back. So, I think we're all agreed that this is good, right? This was a good movie and everybody should see it?
Definitely.
Okay, very good. So, on to the core of our thing. Our favorite movies of 2012, or whatever. The list of movies that you want to talk about for 2012, whether you liked it or not, you know, or what have you. I guess, shall I go first?
Go for it.
All right. These are the movies that are on my list, and I'm not going to go about what I didn't like this year. I guess there's one movie on this list, Wreck-It Ralph. I saw it, I liked it, I thought it was a good family film. It's definitely a good Disney film, especially in the new computer animated vein. I'm going to leave it at that. It was a good movie. And I'm not sorry that I saw it, but I'm not going to go out of my way to watch it again. I'll buy it for the kids and everything when it comes out, clearly. But I don't think, you know, that's not one of those movies I'm going to go out of my way to see again. Other than that, though, let's see here. We had Dark Knight Rises, top of the list for me, by far. Let's see here. Avengers, also an amazing movie that came out this year. We had Bourne Legacy this year. Great movie. Didn't like how it ended, personally, but still a fan of the series and thought it was worth watching. Glad I saw it. The Amazing Spider-Man, and well, we'll just leave it at that. The Hobbit, can't forget The Hobbit, even though we just talked about it. Skyfall, Hunger Games, Lincoln, amazing. Prometheus, which came out this year as well. Brave, outstanding, really just amazing Pixar movie, you know, of course. A surprise mention, Ted. That movie was fucking funny. I'm sorry. I mean, it's Seth MacFarlane, but it is fucking hilarious, and I'm sorry. If you're an adult, you need to see that movie. My last movie on this list is, because I already know it's just going to be badass, so, and I will see it before December 31st, Django Unchained. That is my list of the 2012 movies that I enjoyed, and or will enjoy, technically.
Cool. All right, well, then I'll go ahead and go next. Now, I kind of have a lot, so to keep in mind what I'm going through, I went ahead and broke mine up kind of in categories in a way, but I'll go super fast. So it'll seem like it'll be short, but it won't be. Okay, so for my favorites, now these are... I'm going to go off listing the movies that I enjoyed before I list the movies that I loved. One that I enjoyed was Tim and Eric's Billion Dollar Movie. Another one was Titanic, re-release in 3D, which I enjoyed it because I found out that when I saw it originally back in 97, I was in the same exact movie theater sitting in the same exact seat, so that was kind of weird.
Weird.
The Hunger Games, I thought the Three Stooges movie was pretty entertaining. Men in Black 3 was a pretty was a curveball, in my opinion. I wasn't expecting that one to be entertaining. Ted, Dark Knight Rises. Now, for my absolute favorite movies of the year, The Grey, obviously, going off of what our last week's podcast was. Wanderlust with Paul Rudd and Jennifer Aniston, about the couple who end up living on a commune for a while. I thought that was pretty witty and a brilliant comedy. Just well done. Another good one is The Pirates Band of Misfits. That's my kid movie that I really enjoyed. I love the claymation and the whole, you know, the Chicken Run movie and Wallace and Gromit stuff. It was just really just funny.
I did want to see that movie. I just never got a chance to take the kids out to it. So I'm glad that, you know, that it's getting a positive review here. I will definitely make it.
Yeah, it's just witty. You know, the humor is you know, it's British humor. That's all you can say about it, really. Jiro Dreams of Sushi. Got to throw that one on there.
Oh, awesome.
Thanks to Matt for recommending that. Salmon Fishing in the Yemen. You guys recommend watching this with the ladies. I like it because I like Ewan McGregor a lot, and he is phenomenal in this movie. I think he's nominated for a Golden Globe Award this year. Also on the list is Best Exotic Marigold Hotel with Judi Dench, Bill Nighy, just a whole bunch of people. Another great one. Prometheus. I love Prometheus, despite what a lot of sci-fi fanboys said about it. Looper, Skyfall, Lincoln, The Hobbit. Now for my least favorite, I have to mention these. The Mark Wahlberg, you know, kind of I think the, you know, the type of movie I think he's kind of falling into is Contraband. Another one is Lockout. That was a piece of shit movie. Dark Shadows. That was a lame ass. Tim Burton pissed me off. He pissed me off with Alice in Wonderland. He really pissed me off at Dark Shadows.
Wait, okay, I'm sorry. I have only seen the first 15 minutes of Alice in Wonderland, so I really don't have any point of reference. But when I saw the preview for Dark Shadows, I was like, man, what a waste, because it looks like a dramedy that they're trying to advertise as a comedy, and it looks like they showed all the funny stuff in the preview. So I was not really excited to see Dark Shadows, but everybody, but everybody I've ever talked to is like, oh, Alice in Wonderland is so good. So why did you not like Alice in Wonderland?
So you have Alice in Wonderland. This is not like the cartoon. This is different. It was more of like a sequel in a way, where Alice has been there before and she's going back because everybody knows what's going on. But the Red Queen is still there taking over everything. I guess like the Mad Hatter, his town, I guess the forest, I haven't seen it since I saw the movie theater. The forest he lived in was burned down. The Queen had the dragon burn it down. And, you know, she faces a dragon at the end, so it's another, like, epic battle with a monster and a dragon, because, you know, that's just what the movie needed, I guess, was a dragon battle. And it's just, the movie just didn't have, like, the Tim Burton wit and charm, like, you know, just like Beetlejuice had, or, you know, Ed Wood, or...
All it had was his messed up take on how things should look. I'm sorry, I just don't like Tim Burton in general, and that movie made piss me off.
Exactly. I mean, the whole marketing strategy of it was like this Tim Burton movie. If you watch the trailer, it's just like, oh, well, okay. So like on paper, and if you look at the illustrations and the art pictures of it, I guess, you know, it looks gorgeous. And no, I mean, the cinematography looks nice. It's just, you know, it's just like, it's not a movie. It's not an adventure. It's just a bunch of like individual scenes, you know.
That makes sense. I get it. All right. I just didn't understand. Yeah, so now that you say it's just a visual version of Tim Burton, whereas the actual, there is no heart of Tim Burton in this.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly.
Fair enough.
Unfortunately, what do they call it whenever there's, guilty pleasure. One of my guilty pleasures with movies, it used to be Saw, but they don't have those anymore. Are the Resident Evil movies. I just thoroughly enjoy them. Resident Evil 5 sucked zombie balls.
Oh, I was really looking forward to watching that one too. I just got to see what's the one that takes place in the desert?
Oh, Extinction, right?
Okay, I saw that one. This last one I saw, and I was really excited to see the next one. Is that the next one?
No. The next one is Afterlife. I don't remember. Well, I don't. The one that came out this year is the fifth one.
Oh, okay. So I guess I'm two behind, not one. All
right. Yeah, but it sucks. And actually, the other one that I didn't care for too much was Trouble with the Curve, Clint Eastwood's movie. That I actually went to the movie premiere of and met Justin Timberlake and saw Clint Eastwood and all that stuff.
Cool.
Yet the movie was still pretty lame. Now, I have to say some overrated movies quickly. 21 Jump Street, I thought that movie was overrated. Believe it or not, I kind of thought Moonrise Kingdom was overrated. Though I enjoyed the movie, I just felt like I had to like it, though it is a good movie. Another one is The Dictator. I thought that was overrated. Though I did like The Avengers, and I will say this, that, you know, since I'm not a huge comic book fan, that's probably another reason why. I kind of thought The Avengers was a little overrated for what it actually was. Unfortunately, I thought Brave is the worst Disney Pixar movie, and I thought that movie was completely overrated. The Amazing Spider-Man, I'll leave it there. And also, Paul Thomas Anderson's PTA's The Master. Again, I felt like I had a, you know, I had to like it, but it doesn't even hold up to, you know, There Will Be Blood or Boogie Nights, or even Punch-Drunk Love was good. Now, for my last mini list, is my underrated movies of 2012. And these are ones that I really, really surprisingly thoroughly enjoyed. Life of Pi is on here, and I still think it's underrated. Another one is Seven Psychopaths with Woody Harrelson and Colin Farrell. It's just, it's a terrific movie. If you liked In Bruges, highly suggest Seven Psychopaths. However, it's less dramatic. It's more of a comedy than a hardcore drama. Dredd, the reboot of Judge Dredd with Carl Urban from...
That's another one of those ones that I really wanted to see, and I was so disappointed because it did not work out for me to go. And
it wasn't out that long.
Yeah, right? And I'm worried it won't get a sequel because apparently the movie is just fantastic and deserves better than it got. So.
Exactly. And it was kind of like the movie Shoot 'Em Up with Clive Owen and Paul Giamatti that came out in 2007. Where it's just like, it's all blood, and it's just entertainment, and it's not, I mean, there's special effects, but it just kind of feels like, you know, the 80s set piece sci-fi action movie, which I thought was cool. Another one on my list is Paranorman. I thought that movie's highly underrated. Another one is Oliver Stone's Savages, about the drug cartel and the drug trade in California. Another one is, and I highly recommend this to anybody, it's a Mel Gibson movie, Get the Gringo.
God, I watched that movie like a month ago.
Isn't that great?
It's so good. It is so good. I was like, man, it sucks that Mel Gibson is considered a pariah, because that movie, if he wasn't considered a pariah, that movie would have just been through the freaking roof, because that movie was good.
Yeah, it was. It's entertaining. It's an action movie. It's a throwback to early, like, you know, Lethal Weapon, and it's great. It's great. It's good shit, man. It's good shit.
Absolutely.
Another one is The Raid Redemption, which is a Korean movie. It's basically about a Korean SWAT team has to go through a skyscraper to get the head of this drug lord type of guy who's at the top of this condominium. But they have to get through every level. Every level on the condominium has people that are trying to kill them, like all the tenants are trying to kill them. So it's kind of like a video game setup. It's super entertaining. Great action is nonstop, and it's pretty damn intense. Another one is The Cabin in the Woods. If you like Evil Dead, and if you like Joss Whedon, who did Firefly and The Avengers, he wrote and produced this movie. Highly recommend it. It is a phenomenal movie, and we'll not say anything else about it because it's just, you know, you got to be surprised by it. And do not let anybody spoil it for you, or you will slap them later on, I'm sure. And however, my number one underrated movie of 2012 is John Carter of Mars. I thoroughly enjoyed it. A lot of people did not. And I thought it had... It encompasses every movie that we like Star Wars, Indiana Jones, and the whole setup of the movie and how it was presented. And yet, it got bashed for that. Like, people were saying the pacing was off. It should have had more of an up-tempo pace throughout the movie, but it's like, I kind of think that's what makes the movie unique, is because it's not, you know, a high-strung action movie throughout. You have time to enjoy the visuals, you have, you know, time to embrace the character and embrace the storyline and understand what's going on. So, yeah. There we go.
Alright, Mike, you're up.
Okay. Mine is very short, and it's probably most of them been covered already, so I'll just go The Hobbit, and Avengers, and Dark Knight Rises is on there. Prometheus, The Gray, after watching it, because I thought it was going to be on last week's episode. But yeah, that movie is awesome. One that no one mentioned is I really liked Haywire.
Oh yeah, I had that on mine too.
Yeah, that was really good, I thought. Moonrise Kingdom, okay.
I also added Django Unchained because I know it's going to be great. I'm going to see it Christmas night. And then the only movie that I have on mind that no one else has, and it's, I also consider it an underrated movie that not a lot of people saw, is Safety Not Guaranteed. Is really, really, really good. So good that I actually went from, I didn't like Aubrey Plaza before I saw this movie. She just annoyed me. And then after watching it, I am 180 on her now.
Nice.
Yeah, I actually wanted to check that movie out. So yeah, I'm glad you like it.
It's a really good, Mark Duplass is amazing in it. It's, I think it might get nominated. Well, they're talked for nominations for Best Original Song for Oscar.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. No, I wouldn't have guessed that that movie would have had a, you know.
I forget. It's an actual musician whose band he is in. I can't remember, but he wrote the song and composed it. And but Mark Duplass actually plays it in the movie.
Okay.
Cool. Yeah.
Well, right and, on. I'm sorry, you were going to say
something? Oh, no, that was it. I was just saying, that's all I got.
All right, well, there we go. And look at that. So much for a truncated episode. looks like we went the full fucking 9 yards here.
This will be the first episode that actually gets edited down to 45 minutes.
we'll see, I guess, because I can tell you right now, I mean, we have nothing to talk about for the next episode. So the next episode's only going to be like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So I guess that'll make up for it. So cool. Well, I mean, there you go, everybody. That is our recap of 2012 and our discussion of The Hobbit and the news that was fit to talk about, apparently. So that brings us to the end of another episode. You know, got to thank Mike for being here. Glad you're here, sir.
I'm glad to be here.
Absolutely. And, you know, well, Tim and I, we both kind of have to be here because that's what we do. So, thank you all for listening. As always, the music that you listen to is provided to us by Cries of Solace. They're just awesome, awesome, awesome. And you can catch them at Reverb Nation. You can also follow them on Twitter at Cries of Solace. You can also catch them on MySpace and Facebook, both at Facebook.com, MySpace.com/Cries of Solace. And then you can always check us out on Facebook, and you can follow us on Twitter at TheSLSCast. You can go to our website, TheSLSCast.com. You can follow us on our website, which is SLSCast.com. And you can send us email to TheSLSCast@gmail.com. So that's how you get a hold of us.
And don't forget to follow us on Facebook and whatnot, because we'll be updating with more movie news and whatnot to kind of make up for not really being around like a troubled parent for the holiday season.
That's right. Well, this way we can, you know, as we see stuff, because I know Mike's going to see Django Unchained. I'm going to see Django Unchained. And so I'm sure we'll be able to post some stuff on Twitter and Facebook and stuff like that about what we all thought about it. So, you know, and just so you don't think that the feeds have, like, got minds of their own, we will make sure to, you know, hey, Matt here, hey, Mike here, hey, you know, Tim here, so that you know who you're actually bitching at when you're responding to stuff. And, cool, so that's going to be it, guys. I guess, to anybody listening today or this week, Merry Christmas to you. And anything anybody else wants to say?
Nope.
All together now. And all right, then that is it. So thanks again, and we will catch you next time.
All right, cheers.
Adios.
Thanks again for listening to the SLS Cast with your hosts, Matt and Tim. Remember that you can find us at slscast.com, at the SLS Cast for Twitter, also on Facebook, and you can always subscribe on iTunes. Thanks again for listening.